Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, this is Angela, and today I have both John and Jim, and we are going to talk about when things go sideways.
Yeah, let's talk. Let's start by being mindful. Let's ask ourselves a question. Are lawyers competitive beings? We are taught in law school, it's all part of the culture of being a lawyer, right? Is winning. Did you win your case, right? You walk out of court. Did you win or lose? Especially on those cases where everyone is aligned against you and your client, the child, and you convince the judge that you're right. But what we want to talk about today is when it unravels. You've won, and then everything you won falls apart.
You're like, I'm right. Oh, I was wrong.
Yeah. So now you're concerned, right? You're concerned about your client, right? What's going to happen to them? That's your first concern is, oh boy, I helped lead them to a mess. You're concerned about your credibility, right? Geez, I talked the judge into this. What is she going to think about me next time? Is she ever going to listen to me again? Mm-hmm. And you're concerned about your own judgment. You go, how could I have ever thought that this was a good idea and been so sure about it? Maybe I just belong in insurance defense, right? I don't know. So those are the things that we want to talk about today.
Yeah. So if you're in it to win it, maybe check yourself and back out of that mindset a little bit. But when you're preparing your case and preparing your client for an issue that's going to be contentious, and even when you're arguing your case in front of the court, you plan to prevail on this issue, but you also have to be prepared for the failure. You want to think a couple steps ahead on this. First, with your client, let your client know in the way you phrase things for them. Let them know, because, you know, kids, they see one thing that they want and they refuse to look at any other outcome. So when you're preparing them, let them know that this is what we're going for. This is what we're going to ask the judge for. But, you know, keep plan B in your mind. You know, we had a case with a kid who really wanted to go to grandmother's house, who had a denied home study, unfortunately. So we had to prepare him. We're going to argue like hell to get you at grandma's house. But the other program that you're trashing because you want grandma so much actually is not a bad program. It actually would be really good for you. So we're not saying that's a terrible idea because we're arguing for grandmas. We're not going to tear that down because that's what kids do. It's like, I want this. Therefore, every single alternative on earth is terrible because it's not what I want. You got to take the kid's mind and turn it towards the reality of the situation is that that's actually a really good program. Yes, we want grandmas and we're going to fight for it. So that's one way to prepare your client. You know, it's the same thing with the judge. Don't get yourself caught in the trap of arguing in black and white to a judge. And you see a lot of attorneys do this. And to me, it's very frustrating. You know, my position is right, judge. It is the absolute correct thing to do. Don't even think about doing anything else. Every other outcome would be a disaster. Sounds a lot like the teenager, right? That's what they look like to me sometimes. It's like teenagers arguing to the court. Like, yep. They're the only one who knows what reality is. When you're going to argue to a court, it helps your credibility. It helps your chances of winning to acknowledge that the facts are murky, to acknowledge maybe that the other side may have a point, but not the prevailing point in this particular situation. I had a case once with a kid who really did not want to go into a residential psychiatric facility, but, you know, the department wanted her there. However, they had not tried less restrictive means. She had not had a specialized group home. So she didn't know about that. She just knew she didn't want to go, but she had a legal argument to make. So we made that argument and we prevailed. And it went sideways a little bit. And she had to go to the psychiatric facility after that. But it made sense to her because she had been given the opportunity. And the way we argued to the judge, let the judge know that we're not saying this is the only solution. We're saying this is the best practice. This is the best practice that we should follow for this child right now. And it's the right decision right now on these facts at this point in time. That's going to change in the future.
Another thing I do see, I want to touch on that Jim said, I see a lot of young practitioners make this mistake, is when you're arguing a case and you're so firm in your belief and you've gotten into the flow of the argument and you're defending and defending and defending and objecting and objecting and objecting. And then the judge will finally find, or the other side will finally find the weakness in your case, because everyone's case has a weakness, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, hey, I found the weakness in your case. Isn't it true that the sky is blue? And the young attorneys always go, no, not necessarily. You know, at sunset, the sky could be pink, and in the morning, it could be yellow. And you're sitting in the back of the courtroom going, stop talking, just concede the point. You're winning. Just concede that you're not 110% right. 90% right is fine, right? Give them the 10%, and judges love that you're saying, this is the right thing to do, judge, today, based on the facts before you. If the facts change 3 months later, or you come back before the judge, you can say, well, the facts were what they were when you ruled, judge. You were right. We did the right thing with the facts you had before you. It was the best option available for the child on that day.
Right. Well, and I would add, we kind of skipped over the part of self-questioning when things go sideways, but I think it's fair to say that anytime your job involves a lot of predicting human behavior, there's going to be a lot of failure. And, you know, even at 90%, you know, certainty, or, you know, whatever, you feel like this is, and sometimes it might be 51%. Sometimes you have no good options and, you know, plan A and plan B are sketchy and you got to lean one way or the other. And I don't say that to say we let ourselves off the hook and say, well, not my responsibility, but more to say that as long as you're putting the work in and following your process and determining what you think is, you know, best and consistent with your client's goals, then I do think you have to cut yourself some slack when it doesn't go as planned. And if you're acknowledging that with people, both your client and the court ahead of time, it should build credibility rather than reduce it.
Right. That's the critic we all fear the most when things go sideways, is not the opposing counsel or even the judge. It's when you say to yourself, what was I thinking?
Right.
What was I thinking? I'm in charge of steering this ship, and I agreed to two extensions of the case plan for this parent, and they failed. Why didn't I read the tea leaves correctly? You know, like you said, this is human behavior we're dealing with, and sometimes the best practice is to find out what happens. If you don't have good facts to base your decision on, then you have to go forward until you have them. And that's the best practice that sometimes leads to failure, but failure is where the knowledge is sometimes. It's where the growth is.
I agree.
And also the thing about our practice philosophy that's different is, you know, is that you implement it with fidelity. And we've touched on this before in other podcasts about when things go badly wrong. We've talked about this, about how to sleep at night, right? It's mm-hmm. the same thing, is that you're following your process with fidelity, right? You're not just going from case to case and bouncing from, okay, this kid said this today, and today he's saying this, and tomorrow this other client is saying this, and I'm walking into court with wildly inconsistent positions, and I can't keep up because everything's changing on me every day. You know your client knows you, you've built a relationship of mutual respect, and you and the child have developed a strategy, and you are seeing it through. You are implementing the strategies to get you to the goal of the case that you've decided on with your client. And part of that strategy may be these journeys towards things that have a high probability of not being successful in the long term. You don't ignore that probability. In many instances, you are very honest. You're always honest with the court. Candor to the court is something we always preach here, more so than I would say any other area of the law. It's probably equal for all attorneys, but especially a children's attorney. You are candid with the court. This is our strategy, judge. This is our plan. And yeah, here's the pitfalls. And I'm not saying don't be a zealous advocate. I'm saying be an honest advocate. And I guarantee you the credibility you will gain by being honest will far outweigh the victories you might think you win by trying to BS a judge.
There's nothing more disconcerting from, you know, if you're trying to get a judge to take a bit of a risk, you can't give the the feeling that you're hiding the ball. You don't want them to have to figure it out, or for the judge to feel like that you haven't been forthcoming. So again, I think that while it may seem like you're giving up your weaknesses, at the end of the day, I think it's a real strength to be able to stand before the judge and say, we acknowledge this, but this is best under the facts today.
Right. And the other thing we're really talking more in the context of when you're going in with your client and you're advocating for something and you're asking the judge to kind of go out on a limb because the agency or the CASA or the parent is objecting to it, right? So you're mm-hmm. But there's the flip side, the inverse of that would be when you're being silent and you're going along with the department wants this, the CASA wants this, the parent wants this, and you just let the ship sail down past the judge, and the judge rubber stamps it because, hey, everyone's agreeing. No one's got an opposite position, and you don't take that affirmative position. Then you also might say, well, I let that go sideways as well by mm-hmm. being silent. And we want to guard against that too, right? Because that's very prevalent in our profession is sometimes the reluctance to stand up in the face of everyone else in the courtroom going right and saying, judge, I think we need to go left.
And I guess the next thing I think about, you know, as we're talking about this, something that came into my head was, well, it sounds like you're advocating for placements for kids that you know are going to fail or, you know, have a high probability of failing. And then, you know, how do you deal with that with your client? Let's say that we tried the placement with grandma and it didn't work for whatever reason. What do you do then with your client, and how do you pivot with them?
Well, I'll let Jim answer, but I'll just so everyone knows that it happens to all of us. It just happened to me this week. You know, 2-3 weeks ago, I was in court advocating for a placement over a denied home study. I think it was perfectly safe. My client is almost 18. And it was just an old criminal record history that was really, there was no risk in it at all, but it mm-hmm. had been denied for just administrative reasons. So I got her placed there, but in doing so, I had to put on evidence, and I put on evidence, my client saying, this is great, I love it up here, I'm gonna be great, everything's great, I'm gonna stay here, I'm gonna go to college someday, blah, 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 right? Everything, mm-hmm. sunshine and rainbows. Yesterday, 2 days ago, we had a judicial review hearing in the case, and the client gets on the phone and says, I'm done. I'm leaving when I turn 18. I don't like it here. You know, basically the exact opposite of what I just put on. And I'm thinking, what? Jeez, I look like I have so much egg on my face right now. I'm like, thanks, kid. Thank you. Thanks a lot. You know, and I said, and finally I asked her the question. I said, okay, do you have anything else you'd like to tell the court? She goes, yeah, when are all these people going to get out of my life? Tired of all these people coming to see me, waking me up all kinds of early in the morning. I'm like, okay, look, I'll call you after court. These things happen in these cases, and it's really important to keep in mind that, you know, their failures are part of their journey, their successes are part of their journey, and we're here to reach that ultimate goal that we formed that strategy in the very beginning of the case to reach. And so a lot of this stuff are just steps along the way. Some foreseen, some unforeseen, but you know, sometimes you're going to step in a pile of stuff on the way, but that's part of the process. So don't beat yourself up over it, and don't let your client beat themselves up over it, because it's part of the process. Yeah, I mean, as the story I was just telling, you know, the strategy my client and I have for her is to keep her out of foster care until she turns 18. Because we know she will do horribly in foster care. I even got the court to acknowledge, yeah, she's not a good candidate for foster care. I even got that proven on the record at my hearing that she will do, because of the menu of placements available to her and because of her personality type, she's not going to do well in a group home. You know, she's probably going to end up picking up charges that she doesn't have now, no delinquency history, you know. So the strategy is, the long-term strategy is working. I'm keeping her out. I'm going to get her to 18 without having to go into foster care, which is her biggest wish in life right now. And it's bumpy though, right? There's going to be stops and starts to that, because there is no perfect solution to get us to where we want to go, but we will get there. We're just going to be creative. She and I know each other and we know what the goal is here. So we can have honest conversations about what's next, where do we pivot now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you just got to embrace the chaos of the course you've set for a kid, because it's going to be a bumpy road, like John said. It's going to be chaotic, and you've just got to accept that.
Well, hopefully this podcast has given you some comfort as it relates to when your case goes sideways, and some practical things that you can do ahead of time and afterward. We thank you all so much for listening. And hey, if you know anybody that might enjoy our podcast, please pass it along. We'll have a new episode out soon. You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.